23 minutes past 8 o'clock it is. The new Home Affairs Minister, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, during the delivery of his budget speech earlier this week in Parliament, announced that there are 7 countries that have been added to the visa waiver list for travel to South Africa, and they are New Zealand, the United Arab Emirates, Ghana, Saudi Arabia, Cuba, Qatar, as well as Sao Tome and Principe. Joining me on the line is the CEO of Westgro, Tim Harris. Westgro, of course, an agency tasked with the responsibility of attracting not only trade but also tourism to the region. Tim, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Africa.
This is not unusual, is it, for Home Affairs to add to its list of countries where people looking to travel to Cape Town, to South Africa, do not need to apply for a visa?
Well, look, it doesn't happen often enough as far as we're concerned. But I think the particular interest in this set of countries is it comes after a commitment from the president that he would be taking a serious look at increasing visa-free travel. And then also some of these countries are pretty significant growth markets for us as a country and certainly as a province in terms of tourism. So it's definitely a sort of welcome boost of momentum.
At least let's, explore some of those growth potentials. Is it in all 7 of them or specific ones? What is that growth potential?
Well, okay, let's start with the ones that are a little bit smaller. So Sao Tome and Principe, islands of West Africa, very beautiful places in themselves, but about 200,000 people. Very much a kind of symbolic move. But just nearby of Ghana, you've got a very successful country in recent years with about 30 million travelers or 30 million citizens rather, that's actually been sending tens of thousands of travelers to the country and a couple thousand to the Western Cape every year with some pretty good, strong growth performance. So Ghana is a very interesting market for us. It's a very important symbolic move to introduce visa-free travel to a fast-growing fellow African country like Ghana. But certainly in terms of our ability to attract wealthy Ghanaians to the Western Cape, we get about 4,000 every year. But now that we've reduced or rather relaxed the requirement to get a visa, we'd be looking to increase that number in the next few years coming. So that's a really big, important relaxation on the continent. And then probably the most strategic in terms of being able to attract high net worth tourists who are spending a lot of money is the concessions in the Middle East. So you've got really big countries here, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar. We're talking about 30 million people in Saudi, about 10 million in UAE. And visa-free travel is really important for this Arab market, the Arabian markets. We've got great air connectivity across a lot of the Middle Eastern carriers like Emirates, Qatar and Etihad. But we've also got other African carriers that connect us to the Middle East. So you can get to Cape Town, for example, on Ethiopian, Kenyan or Rwandan airlines connecting us strongly to the Middle East. And then these markets are also very useful, not only because they're high spenders, but particularly because the Middle Eastern markets tend to come in our winter, right? They're not put off by the reputation that we have for slightly wetter, rainier winters. They actually enjoy that break from the Middle Eastern weather. So it's a very important concession to give visa-free travel to the Middle East. Rounding off the list, Africa is the market we've discussed many times, New Zealand. This is one where there's been a real history of kind of tit-for-tat visa requirements, allegations going both ways, but a really important market for us. About 15,000 Kiwis visit us every year in South Africa, but that number's dropped off hugely since we introduced visa requirements. I remember chatting with you in April about how the plan was to introduce e-visas, and we're very relieved that that's gone even further to say no, back to visa-free travel. And we need to look at getting back to those numbers that we were experiencing a couple of years ago when we were getting about 25,000 Kiwi visitors. Obviously, they spend a lot of money as well, and a very strategic market for us in a kind of south-south relationship here. So all in all, a very encouraging list of countries, and we look forward to making hay from this new sun that's shining.
No doubt. What does it mean, though, for our development of the technology around e-visas? And I use those terms, you know, loosely, because there are many other countries that are using e-visa application platforms very successfully. And it's a matter of just, I suppose, looking to those systems, adopting it for a South African specific need and applying it in this case. But as you said, New Zealand was that market where the department was trialing what would be an e-visa application system.
Yeah, look, I mean, you really do need these options, right? If you're going to have a visa requirement for a country, and it's possible to have an e-visa system which is much easier to access and much quicker to use, then absolutely you have to have that option. But right now, it's not clear. I haven't heard anything about actually having been made available in New Zealand. That doesn't mean they weren't available, but every time I checked in with the people we work with in New Zealand, they said they read this announcement, but they never had the system go live. So you're right. I mean, this is now it's certainly a much better situation just simply to have visa-free travel from New Zealand. But it does make you wonder how far are we from being able to roll out effective e-visas to our important markets quickly. So that's certainly something we'll be looking into. As you point out, this was meant to be the pilot, and we just need to make sure if we as a country do decide to introduce e-visas that we've got the capability to do that. Because obviously it's an important step of liberalization between a full kind of in-person visa application and then the requirement that no visas will be needed. You really do need that intermediary step.
In a moment, Tim, I'll be asking you about the trade potential, I suppose, that can be realized in this easing off of visa requirements between the seven countries and South Africa. But first, yesterday, obviously the big conversation was around the deployment of the National Defence Force to parts of Cape Town. 10 precincts have been identified. And later on this afternoon, during a press conference at 1 o'clock in Paarl, we'll find out how that will actually be rolled out in detail when the police minister, alongside Premier Ellen Windy and other tiers of government, will be making that presentation following the conclusion of the crime summit. I did receive an email from a listener yesterday who has a new client who will be visiting Cape Town for the first time in March of next year, has already paid the deposit that is required for them to secure their place at the establishment, worried with what was a BBC news headline that says army is being deployed in Cape Town. How are you, alongside Cape Town Tourism and SA Tourism, going to counter the imaging and the messaging that will be going out to the international media space around the deployment of the army in the city?
Well, firstly, I think everybody should agree that the number one priority is getting on top of this situation, is starting to get momentum in the other direction, starting to reduce crime rates, because frankly, as Capetonians, whether you're involved in the tourism industry or not, this is simply an unacceptable situation. So whatever operational response can start turning around the situation, I think everybody should welcome that. There's no question that we have to get on top of crime. when it comes to the messaging for tourists, obviously, I mean, this is a very easy to understand development. It plays well in international headlines. And I think it's up to those of us that communicate to these international markets to explain what's actually going on. Because the example that I like, and I've discussed with some of our American diplomats in the city over the last few years, it actually relates to their country. When the U.S. issues a travel advisory, they'll often have previously kind of spoken about issues like crime in Cape Town with pretty much zero clarification of how the crime is patterned across the city, of the kind of extreme sort of regional dynamics, particularly around the gang violence on the Cape Flats. And a similar example actually happens in the US. There's a city that everybody knows as one of the world's great cities, one of the great business destinations. It's Chicago, right? It's an extraordinary city that has an incredibly high crime rate relative to other cities in the US. And that's because Africa, they've got a very similar, highly localized problem with gangs in certain suburbs of Chicago. But of course, that what they managed to get right is this distinction that Chicago remains a serious destination for business and tourism. And there are areas that have significant problems with crime that are absolute no-go zones. And I think that's our challenge as marketers, as communicators, working with our partners in the foreign markets to explain the kind of nuance of the crime situation here. We have to acknowledge, first of all, that in total, it's an unacceptable situation, and operational responses like you're seeing from the army are very welcome in terms of reversing this trend. But there are very distinct regional dynamics in the city, and there are areas that tend to be frequented by tourists where the reality of the situation is very different from in other areas. And if a city like Chicago, if the Americans can communicate this and it can be understood as clearly as it is, then I think that is our challenge in Cape Town to get that message across.
Because, of course, what we do not want to see is the devastating impact of this development, which I agree with you needs to happen, right? If we have people in Cape Town under siege because of gang violence that is getting out of control, we have to have this government responding to that. And seemingly the deployment of the army is possibly one of the tools that are going to be most effective in containing the violence, at least. So that needs to be done. But a couple of years ago, we had to count down to day zero because we were running out of water. And certainly the industry will remember how devastating an impact that had on the number of people then continuing to book experiences and coming to experience Cape Town.
Mm, for sure. But I also think, you know, we've learned a lot from that water situation. There's a degree of collaboration, there's a degree of cooperation between industry and government, between the various parts of government that we really pulled together in the drought. And managed to get on top of the tourism messaging in particular quite quickly. I mean, I remember in the early stages of the drought, we were fielding questions on your station with locals saying, why are we still promoting tourism when we're running out of water? We may not have enough water for ourselves. Why do we want more people using water? And we went back and very quickly came out with the statistics that showed that less than 1.5% of our water users were tourists. We got that message out there. We got that message to the tourists to say, you need to still keep coming. We need your business. We need the jobs that are linked to tourism. And frankly, we can do tourism in a more responsible way. And we can, when you're in Cape Town, you can become a water wise tourist. And I think we got on top of that position really quickly. It's now something that's synonymous with Cape Town and the Western Cape, this idea of responsible tourism. And all that is kind of clear communication that's driven not just by various agencies and parts of government, but frankly where Cape Townians are understanding the reality of the risk facing the destination and helping to communicate that tourism needs to sustain through these difficult times because we need the jobs and we need the foreign exchange that comes into our market from the tourism industry. So I think there are definite parallels, but certainly Cape Townians should be reassured that this is now a system that works very well together between government and business and within government. So I think even a really thorny communication challenge like this security situation is one that we will be able to communicate clearly and keep the growth of tourism going in the Cape.
No doubt. Thank you very much for that. Investment opportunities from the 7 countries that have been added to the visa waiver list for travel to South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about WESCO having this quite broad set of mandates, promoting tourism, promoting investment, promoting exports, is the degree to which they're increasingly linked. The world is obviously experiencing a lot of globalization. People are traveling more, and it's very clear that often that people who come for leisure or come for a conference it's an important first link towards establishing a relationship that could lead to trade and that could lead to foreign investment. And a good example, in fact, is New Zealand. So we spoke about the very particular impact that imposing visas on that country had on travel. But it also threatened some of the significant trade that we do with New Zealand every year as a province. So we're doing about $60 million of trade. We sell them a huge amount of dried fruit, of wine, of cosmetics, and then they sell us quite a lot of frozen fish and harvesters and other equipment used for our agricultural sector. So this is a really positive trading relationship between South Africa and New Zealand. And we saw an impact in the trade. It was much smaller than the impact from tourism. But there's an obvious link. If you start making it harder for the people who you're trading with to come here, there's definitely an impact on the trading volumes. And then, of course, we've also had some significant investment both ways. We've had companies like Woolies investing into retailers in New Zealand. We've had shipbuilders like Southern Spa from New Zealand and tech companies like Xero investing here. And I think these investments and this trade has been pinned on this open relationship, including visa-free travel. And I'm very relieved that we're now back there, and we look forward to building some more trade and investment on the back of this liberalized regime. And Africa, that's simply an example around New Zealand, but you would see exactly the same thing happening with these Middle Eastern markets and with West Africa.
Tim, thank you very much indeed for those insights. Tim Harris, CEO of WizGrow, responding to the announcement made by the Minister of Home Affairs of the 7 countries that have now been added to the visa waiver list for travel to South Africa. That's New Zealand, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Cuba, Sao Tome and Principe, as well as Ghana.